While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold, pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball.
You know, we're kind of renowned for not conceding goals, and that's what we praised them on a lot last year. And we kind of said, right, if they can sort out their attacking line and, you know, get more goals into that team, then they could be nearly unstoppable.
Subscribe to the Koigig Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
Michael McCarthy is here. Hello, Mick.
How are you?
Will O'Callaghan is here. Hello, Will.
Evening, chaps. How are we?
All good. I think, of a chirpier disposition when it comes to Saturday night.
I know.
I mean, I did think, you know, nothing could, you know, ruin my mood in terms of, like, the fortunes of Irish rugby more than the result itself and the performance in the scrum. And then there was a South African man sitting in front of me at the stadium, and this is the new thing that South Africans are doing. They keep going like this, they keep doing the scrum sign to each other, and that's kind of like their insignia, as it almost like, I don't know, like what were the wrestling duo who do those hand gestures as a team, like the Jeff Hardy and his brothers? They would do like a...
There's no one trying to play down his knowledge of the Hardy
and
boys.
His brothers.
And his brother Matt, yes. I'm not familiar.
They had hand signals. Certain people have hand signals to celebrate their sporting team, and the Springbok fans have now got this, you know, scrum sign to signify how brilliant they are. And I find it a little bit annoying. Nevertheless, I found Saturday evening engaging and enthralling and very, very unique. I don't want to see this every single week from rugby, but I just thought that first half an hour of rugby might have been horrifying to some people, but it was one of those moments that you can't really look away from, given its uniqueness. Is that a positive outlook on it? Maybe not. Maybe that's actually quite a negative way to look at it.
It was certainly unique. I did like, just talking to people during the match and all, I did say a few times, I've never seen a match like this. And someone missed the game, and I was trying to explain it to them before they watched it back, and they were like, you know, was the Prendergast the right call? I was like, it couldn't possibly matter less. You know, like, it was like, there's no way of explaining this game to you. It was a one-off. It was unique. So I do think, because of that, it's hard to take seriously the kind of harbinger of doom of this is the way rugby is going, etc. However, as a individual spectacle, maybe it's different when you're there. And it does seem like it was different when you're there. The atmosphere sounded great, but it was so boring for a finish. Like, as it went, like, the match took 2 hours and 7 minutes overall, including halftime. That's far too long. And there's a serious issue with rugby in that regard. There's far too many stoppages. They're so pernickety about every little decision at this stage. You know, TMOs are calling, like, offsides and stuff now. Like, when did that come into the game? When was that actually greenlit, even in the laws of the game, that a TMO has the purview to come in and call an offside?
It's, you know, become, like, it's become a bit more VR.
There's a lot of issues here like that, I think, that it, you know, and you add in the kind of scrummaging spectacle, or lack thereof, and the fact that, you know, there was a period in the second half where I think the ball was between the Irish 22 and the 10-metre line for about what felt like 45 minutes.
It was the mirror image of the first half.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so it was happening in the first... Maybe the first half bothered me less again because it was still a contest and you were kind of like a little bit, for good or bad, like absolutely enthralled by what was happening and the Irish yellow cards and red card and so on. And that was bizarre. Like, we've never seen that before.
It was a full-on siege. And it was kind of a compelling aspect to trying to watch your team break the siege. You knew that the outcome was going to be bad, but you thought, could they actually upset what the odds are in front of us here and, I don't know, escape without conceding on this, escape without losing another man in this scenario?
I actually thought Ireland were going to end up with 11 players at halftime, because when the penalty try happened, I thought another yellow was going to be flashed. Yeah. And I was thinking,
why wasn't there another yellow?
I don't know. I thought we were
getting... Probably should have been 11 players.
Whatever the contest that they may have been in the scrum with the way South Africa, I thought we were almost at uncontested scrums when you go down to 11 players. So... yeah, it was a sobering one. And, like, if anyone was disagreeing with the Prendergast decision, the fact is that was just an accumulation, which happens all the time. Yeah. Penalties have been given away continually. And
No. I'm not talking about the yellow card for the offside. Sorry, that was an offside. There was just... what I'm saying is that the TMO is calling for penalties and different things like that. The issue of uncontested scrums, I thought Ireland, by the way, should have, I haven't heard this mentioned, but like, why did, when Paddy McCarthy got a yellow card, Ireland just say Andrew Porter's injured? Yeah. You know, like, I mean, take that weapon away from them immediately. You know, put, I don't know who in there. Like, bring back on Dan Sheehan and play him prop.
It feels as like if that was a Springbok weakness, which it absolutely is not, they might have pulled the stroke like that.
I do feel that there's a lot of that, isn't there? You know, it's like immediately I got bother on Twitter because people read things that happen 10 minutes into a game, 7 hours after a game, and think that it's your wider opinion. But like the idea of the non-yellow card at the start of the game, my take on that was like, if this had, South Africa, regardless of the referee's overall performance, which I largely don't want to get into, right? There's differences of opinion and so on. And God forbid you take on the rugby folk and tell them what you think of something. But that
are
decision,
you trying to argue that South African
that decision is awful?
Not reasonable people.
That is, I'm talking about all rugby Twitter, to be honest, for the most part. That decision was ridiculous, right? And I think it's clear and obvious it's ridiculous. And it strikes me as a large coincidence that it comes the week after South Africa say, how come we're getting the yellow cards and red cards in every game? How come that's only happening to us? And then they go and have a no-arm shoulder tackle to the head, you know, 5 minutes into the game. And the referee says, oh, I'm not convinced it's not a no-arms tackle, penalty only. That's weird to me, right? I haven't seen a head decision like that being called like that in a long, long time. I know he did it later with the O'Brien thing, which I think there was far more mitigating factors for. But anyway, so he does that. I'm thinking to myself, for good or bad, not calling any kind of corruption, not anything. South Africa have made a big deal of this, and that's the outcome. Mm-hmm. There's no way Ireland are going to do that. There's no way Ireland are going to use this and cause a fuss and basically get in the grill of world rugby and say that we're being unfairly this, that or the other.
So Andy Farrell needs to be like more that. Halgrimson then. Because Halgrimson obviously did that the week of the Portugal game.
Farrell or whoever. Yeah, that's a fair point actually, yeah. But I do think that like the South Africans make a lot of noise, and as you said, if they did that uncontested scrums, they would take advantage of that situation. Were we the sporting losers who just decided to play the game in the right way and go out and give away another 6 scrum penalties?
It was a consistent message, by the way, from South Africa across the week. So their players on Monday had started just kind of feeding that out. Then it makes the headlines on Tuesday. Razzie is then up for media ahead of the game on Thursday. He brings it up as well in a slightly charming way, but he brings up the idea that, you know, we've not agreed with some of the decisions that have happened and some of the consistency around refereeing while they've been in the Northern Hemisphere. And next thing on the Saturday, a few marginal calls go their way.
Yeah, this is obviously the part where we're supposed to say, well, of course it didn't have any impact on the result, but I think everybody knows that from watching the game. It's just it's something that you can almost learn from what South Africa have done. They've got everything off to a T, and that includes controlling the message from day one of the week. As you say, it was Monday that they first put this out last week, potentially even Sunday, because I think it was in Monday's papers last week. So straight away, the
agenda
is... When
they arrived in Ireland, they were being asked about this before they even started the week.
And it's only a small thing, but it's not unimportant.
There is only one other thing about this, Owen, before we think that this is just a week in and of itself. So our former colleague Neil Tracy pointed this out. So the cards that Ireland picked up from the summer of 2021 till the Rugby World Cup 23, when the form was really good, 3 yellow cards in 29 games. 22 games have taken place since the World Cup. Ireland have had 19 yellow cards and 3 reds.
And we should clarify, that is absolutely on Ireland. This is not on any sort of officialdom conspiracy against Ireland.
The way the rules are being applied is slightly different, which is obviously a bit of a factor, but that is a massive change in discipline.
Yeah, certainly. Like James Ryan and Jack Crowley in particular, like, you look at those two moments at the weekend.
Awful.
And they're complete head losses and inexplicable for a team who have designs and being one of the best in the world.
We were very lucky to get a player back on after 20 minutes for James Ryan.
Yeah.
Like, that could have
old
easily
rules,
been a whole straight
red.
Could, even in the new rules, I think that should probably be a straight red. So take the official out of it. I will say, if Sam Prendergast hits that penalty and it goes 5-3, it's an easy penalty, he hits the post from. And James Ryan doesn't get set up. Now, here's the thing. Given what happened after, it's all, you know, therefore because of. Like, it's hard to know whether Ireland's discipline gets so bad, whether the scrum is in as much trouble with an actual second row in there rather than 2 converted back rows. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. If that penalty goes over, James Ryan doesn't get sent off, Now, there's another world where it happens 5 minutes later anyway to a different player and everything unfolds exactly the way it is. I'm not saying that we would have won the game or anything like that, but it was a huge thing to happen, like absolutely massive. We shouldn't discount it. But like, why were we so unable to adjust during the game? Why were they like, this is a top level? Again, I heard a lot of people say, ah, but South Africa are the best team in the world, they're so good. It's like, well, yeah, but they, like, this is Ireland at the Aviva and we think of ourselves as one of the top nations. You can't go out and get absolutely destroyed for 80 minutes and not have some questions about it. I think sometimes we can be hiding a little bit behind, you know, past performance or not wanting to upset players and coaches. This was a really, really poor effort from Ireland. But the discipline, the only thing they did was stay in the game in a quite remarkable way, really.
Yeah.
But in terms of the rugby they played, not good enough.
When it's such a comprehensive defeat as well, I don't think you can really kind of cling on to the fact that Ireland won the second half or that Ireland actually stopped the bleed at halftime within the game. The reality is that South Africa won that game completely comprehensively. And I think particularly what you've seen with South Africa's win in Paris while men down where they had to adjust, it feels like South Africa are quite a bit ahead of Ireland at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can write this off now as, oh, Ireland are maybe not peaking 2 years out from the World Cup cycle and maybe they're waiting until... I think this far more feels like teams have now worked Ireland out and actually given the age profile of the Ireland team as well. I find this way more concerning than the way it's tried to be played down.
It's not the end of the world though, because it could be a wake-up call, and why do we take these things more seriously than every other team?
Yeah, well, and nobody can accuse Ireland of peaking mid-World Cup cycle in 2 years' time as well, so it's great to have got that eventuality out of the way. The one thing I would say on the, you know, the moral victory aspect of it all, which I know we're past that, South Africa would have loved nothing more than to absolutely hammer Ireland on the scoreboard on Saturday night. And they didn't manage to do that. They hammered Ireland in every single capacity except for on the score. Like, it was the biggest pasting of an 11-point win I've ever seen. And it could have been 4 points if Ireland had finished off that chance. Been. And like, imagine if you're talking about a 4 point. It would be borderline incomprehensible that South Africa would have only won that game by 4 points at the end. And that very nearly was the full time score. So I don't know. There's you've got to explain that in some way. You're either saying, well, South Africa aren't converting their dominance into points enough, or else Ireland are actually doing quite well in terms of their last-ditch defending or clinging on to a situation which is desperately coming away from them. Like, I wouldn't just put that down to garbage time, the last quarter of that game.
No, it wasn't. I don't think so. I think what
our second half.
For me personally, it's two things. It's Ireland not capitulating with 12 and 13 men for a significant amount of time.
Which isn't nothing.
No, it's not nothing at all. I think that's a huge thing to take out of this game. It's everything else that was lacking. But I think that's incredibly impressive. And they got some turnovers on the line and everything like that. They really never gave up, which is unbelievable, you know, considering what was going against them over the course of the game. But then also, I think South Africa kind of, for a finish, almost fetishized the beating up of Ireland rather than the contest of the rugby game. Rather than, like, you know, I think scoring tries was almost secondary to this scrum thing is hilarious. Let's go every single time. And then it'd be like you'd see Porter or McCarthy eventually. It's like absolutely right. We're not giving away another penalty this time. And they would go like as square could be. The referee couldn't possibly have a problem. And then South Africa would just drive them back so far that they would have to collapse. It would, like, through no fault of their own. Right, another penalty, yellow card, off we go. Like, I just think South Africa were enjoying it. I really do.
The ball is 20 metres out the back of the scrum. Damian Willems said, with 20 yards of space in front of him, it's an open try, but they're like, no, we're going to, unless the referee puts up his arm into an upright position, we are not stopping our push because we are stronger than you and we want to show you that. So I don't know, we'll be chatting to Andy Dunn, Jerry Thornley from 8 o'clock to talk about this. Our number
were you at it?
I was at it, yeah. I was behind a lad who was like this the whole time.
Oh, sorry, you were saying
that's so many South Africans got their hands in tickets, which actually did help the atmosphere for the game generally as well. But there were a lot of South Africans, seems a lot of them came from England over to the game, but I thought more so than any of the other November internationals we played recently, there was a lot of away fans there.
Yeah, there was.
But it also felt like a Six Nations atmosphere rather than, like, I was at the Australia game last week and it was fine. I thought the Aviva did everything brilliantly. I would rarely say that, but I thought the everything, the setup and all that was class. But then people just started chatting like they always do. It's always like about 30% of people that you're sitting near at a rugby game are just like not watching it. It didn't feel that way on TV, I have to say.
Maybe While I've just said we are beyond the moral victory for Ireland teams, maybe as supporters we're not beyond that, and it's actually the thing that engages us more than anything, the prospect that we might have got hammered.
Yeah.
But actually just digging in for the team, hoping that a hammering would not be coming, maybe that's actually what exercised the fans. Also, I do think 5:40 is a great time on a Saturday, especially for a kickoff. I think maybe 8 o'clock is a bit too late, is it? And obviously the Japan game is way too early. I think 5:40 is kind of the nice sweet spot for people to get their pre-match refreshments in, and it was kind of a perfect night for rugby. And I just think there's like a little bit of spice between Ireland and South Africa.
There
and
is. Oh, as you right, 100%.
As you rightly say, the South African fans added a little bit as well. And when you hear rival fans giving it the big one, I think maybe home fans are more likely to give it back to them as well.
That's really weird. The people who seem to think that Razzie had like flipped the bird at the Ireland fans when it was really clear it was two thumbs up. Was I? Yeah, but
it was. It was literally as bad as it was the same. I don't care. I think fair play to him. But
yeah, who cares?
Like if thumbs up finger. It was the most sarcastic thing that ever happened. Like so, there was no. I don't think he was actually saying well done Ireland fans who were booing vociferously.
Now Michael, he's trying to claim there was some nice Springbok fans in South African jerseys. He was just giving them support for their support.
Yeah, he's a gas man. I have to say, I think I like Razzie after his week of antics more than I did beforehand. He's just kind of, when you're seeing him every day, there's a charm to it all.
Oh, there definitely is.
So I noticed in the train home, he hadn't tweeted for weeks, and he tweeted full time.
5 minutes after the game ended.
I was flicking through my timeline, and I just went, wait a minute, he's just tweeted. It's not giving out or anything. It was just basically South Africa flag, but he had waited until after the Ireland game to do it.
Yeah, well, they're in a serious spot at the moment. I mean, maybe you could flip it and say they're peaking too soon before the next World Cup, but I think their strength and depth is just so incredible that it's probably hard to envisage that. We're going to get into the news round in just a moment. Before that, though, if you're not already an Off The Ball member, now is your chance. You can get the perfect gift for the sports fan in your life this Christmas, and our Black Friday offer is now live. You can get a 1 year Off The Ball subscription for just $69.99, down from $99.99. You'll get exclusive podcasts, ad-free listening and early event access. You can go to offtheball.com/Black Friday for more, and the offer ends on the 1st of December, so don't miss out. Will, you are starting with the Premier League.
We are, yeah. Arsenal got a very comfortable lead at the top of the league. Now Thierry Henry among those who said they have to embrace the pressure of being favourites. Now Eberechi Eze scored a hat-trick as Mikel Arteta his side saw off their North London rivals Tottenham by 4-1 yesterday. It was live here in News Talk. They moved 6 points clear at the summit ahead of their clash with Bayern Munich now in the Champions League. This is a big week for Arsenal. They've got Chelsea at the weekend, who are sitting second as well. Arteta says it was an excellent performance from his team.
Well, a great day. I enjoy every minute of it, from the preparation since the moment that the players come back from international duty. I sense a feeling that they wanted to be together again, that they were ready for a fight, they were ready for a big week, and the preparation was top. Then you have to deliver it, obviously with the energy that our people brought to the stadium. It made a huge difference. I think individually the players were exceptional from the minute one. We were super dominant in almost every phase of the play. So, yeah, a day to remember. You don't win a derby 4-1 every time. And hopefully we made a lot of Arsenal supporters very proud and happy.
Yeah, indeed. Mikel Arteta speaking there. You've got a roundup of the rest of yesterday's action, Will?
Yeah, well, Aston Villa now up to fourth place. Manchester United can join them level on points if they win later. But Villa came from behind to win 2-1 against Leeds, who remain in the relegation zone. Daniel Farke under pressure. And I'll mention what happened with one of their supporters a little bit later on as well. United can go level on points with Villa if they beat Everton at Old Trafford tonight. It is the 1 year anniversary of United boss Ruben Amorim getting the job. And he feels Everton's current position of 13th is not reflective of the quality of their squad.
It doesn't matter. In our league, it doesn't matter. The table, it doesn't matter. Everything is so tight that is irrelevant. And if you know the history of our team, you never know where is the difficult game. So that is completely irrelevant in Premier League.
I know you've been asked about anniversaries a lot recently, but on Monday it's a year since your first game. What do you remember about the build-up to that Ipswich game? Obviously coming to a new country, trying to get the players to learn a new way of playing in 2 or 3 days, it must be very hectic.
Yeah, there was everything really fast. The first thinking was like the first game, the environment is completely different to Premier League, and I was excited with that. Right away, I knew that we will struggle in some things, but was that feeling of yes, is the best league in the world, is maybe the best club in the world, but at the same time, is a big job and is going to require a lot of work.
So team news in ahead of the game at Old Trafford. Joshua Zirkzee, his first start of the season for Manchester United. That's because Matthias Cunha is missing out due to an injury he picked up in training at the tail end of last week. Benjamin Sesko is of course still out with a knee injury, so that means a big opportunity potentially for Shay Lacy, who is only 18 years of age, is on the bench for the first time for United. The changes at the back then: Lenny Yoro comes in for Harry Maguire, while Lisandro Martinez is in a squad for Amrum for the first time since February of this year when he had knee surgery. So the United starting 11 then is Lammens in goal. You've got Yoro, De Ligt, Shaw and Mazraoui in defence. Casemiro and Fernandez, along with Dorgu, who's going to play on the left-hand side, Ahmed on the right, and Mbeumo and Xerxes are going to lead the line for them. The big news from Everton is that their skipper Seamus Coleman, who is of course in great form for Ireland in the recent international window, comes in the only change from the side that beat Fulham 2-0 a fortnight ago. So he comes into the team in defence. Pickford is going to be in goal. Garner, who's on loan from Manchester United, Tarkowski, Keane, Mielenko, Coleman. Then you've got Gay, Ndai and Dewsbury Hall are going to be in midfield, and Grealish is going to be supporting Barry there. So that is the Everton team. Of course, Mark Travers continues to be on the bench for the Toffees there.
The first thing I did when I looked at that Everton team was look at the bench and Jacob Ryan on the bench, and I was like, he's never getting back in that Everton team because James Garner, of course, in the starting team. And I was like, wait, hold on a minute, that's Seamus Coleman in that right back slot. This is amazing.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable
It's a great shout from Moyes, because I feel like that what they were doing last season, and feels like they haven't really done it yet this year, is like use Coleman in targeted games. You know, it's like when you need that sort of like big leader, one performance a month kind of thing. Like that's a great way to use Seamus Coleman if they can.
Yeah, we were wondering how many minutes he was going to get. So Moyes was talking about him on Friday as well and said he's not sure how many minutes he has in Coleman, and was almost talking down the idea of him coming back into the team, which is surprised me most when I saw the teams just as we were coming in. But as Mick says, I think it's a case if you put him in, horses for courses, Monday night, Old Trafford, where you're going to be defending a lot, you want Coleman to be there, you want him to be solid, and Everton will want to try and, I'd say, get away without conceding tonight, and that's the trick.
Of course, Shay Lacy on the bench there, the most Irish sounding man of all time. He does have Irish links, but he's played for England at underage level. He is the younger brother of Paddy Lacy, the only man who's got a more Irish sounding name than Shay Lacy himself. So hopefully we have, I mean this in the best way possible, hopefully he's got, you know, a mediocre few years, goes for Ireland instead, and then he explodes into form and he's 21-22. Hopefully that's what the career trajectory is, but I suspect he's got big things coming in the near future.
As well, you heard what Hamer Hagams said on the embargoed section of Thursday, which is in the papers on Sunday, which was the FAI are now casting the net and they're going to try and find as many granny rule players as possible. Yeah. So he might not be in charge for it, but I remember he said when he took over, when he was in Jamaica, they had a spreadsheet of players who could potentially play. They knew there were guys with Jamaican heritage who were playing in Spain and England. It was just a case of keep an eye on them. If there's any chance they can turn, they will. And he didn't rule out Dewsbury Hall and a few others he was asked about as well. I don't think they're going to change their mind. I don't think Harvey Barnes is going to play for Scotland just because
he keeps getting asked about it.
Oh my God, it's so funny. Like, he scores two goals then the day after, you know? Yeah. come here, I'm going to interrupt here because I have a terrible feeling your man's trying to throw to a break here and trying to gloss over the fact that he doesn't want to talk about Arsenal.
No, please bring it on.
Yeah, no, just the panic this man brought to the table on Friday's show. It's like, oh, there's no way. Arsenal can't possibly win the league now. Man City are going to rob home. They're going to win every game, and a lot can change in 72 odd hours.
Yeah, Tottenham Hotspur are not very good at the moment, it turns out, but Arsenal are, to be honest with you, and like Eze is a lot better than I thought he was. Not, maybe a lot is a stretch. He's better than I thought he
that
was.
That happens a lot with kind of the mid-table players that are stars, and sometimes it's like you don't really see that much of them, and you often see them against the better teams.
Yeah.
And actually supporting a traditional mid-level team who always... beat Aston Villa, who Eze's team always beats. Like, I used to see that man, like, and just fear him so much. Like, he is a spectacular player. But I do honestly think that is what it is. It's like, you're only ever seeing them against Arsenal and like, Man City and everything like that, you know?
No, I know that, but, like, I kind of feel that when you looked at that Palace team from 2 years ago and you had that front trio of Eze, Mateta and Olise, I was not surprised whatsoever to see Olise go and just really seamlessly slot in with Bayern Munich, reach Champions League level.
Again.
Yeah, unbelievable at the weekend as well. Yeah, a couple of assists as well. It's Eze versus Olise this week, actually. And I just felt probably it's actually more of a tax on his age more than actually the fact that he's playing for Crystal Palace. I just kind of felt that, oh, we've seen his potential now because he's no longer 23, 24, 25. This guy has obviously peaked. And I think I probably used that in terms of judging him wrongly as opposed to the fact that he played for Crystal Palace. But Kaio Saka has never scored a hat-trick for Arsenal. So Eze has already done something that Saka has not done for... So that's what I'm talking... The heights he hit yesterday were not heights that I thought
Fifth
Eze
ever hat-trick, I think, maybe seventh. I don't have the number, but like that low in the North London Derby in history.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, for first ever in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the first Englishman to score in a North London Derby in his first one since Ian Wright as well.
Wow.
He's amazing. I thought Arsenal in general, just such a dominant performance. And it's funny, like it wasn't the greatest game. I turned it off the last few minutes for the NFL. But I was watching after the dross of Saturday night, one way or another, I was watching Leeds Villa on the long grass Ellen Road as Leeds clamoured and battered into Villa players. And I was just like, I've had enough bad sport this weekend. I just don't want to watch any more crap games. And then I was thinking, oh, if I was an Arsenal fan now, how enjoyable the beautiful Emirates pitch and the really nice football that they played a lot of times, by the way, at all. It's not all Route 1 set pieces at the moment either, you know. So they're just looking great, great shape. And given what happened to City on Saturday night as well, you're basically back in the position that they were a couple of weeks ago, where you're kind of thinking what might need to happen for Arsenal to fall over the line the first time is to go and have it over by February. There's a good chance that happens
if they win this Sunday at the Bridge. Yeah. That becomes a far more distinct possibility,
much more important game than Bayern Munich as well, because that's just again, you're going to top 8 anyway,
Patrick being a buzzkill, but an accurate buzzkill. Someone for Arsenal, but should Eze's first goal have stood? I thought the same thing myself, Patrick. Maybe if you're using the Robertson rule of 2 weeks ago, maybe it should not have stood. I think it's a fair point, but we wouldn't have got the Eze vibes or the aura, as Mikel Arteta says himself.
I was also wondering about Eze as well. Does it get to a point where he becomes Arsenal's best number 10 as well? I know Odegaard is back this week. Seems like he should be the starter in that position. He popped up to all those kind of lovely spots that you'd want him to be in yesterday. Obviously, he's shown he can shoot off both feet with the hat-trick that he scored as well. He had another he could have scored if there was a better pass to him too. So, I don't know. I just think on form, Odegaard might struggle to get back into that position.
He's given the manager a big decision.
He surely has.
Hey, football fans. Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
The Imro Award-winning sports program.
Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
You're welcome back to Monday's News Round. It's Owen, Will and Mick here in studio. We've brought you the news there in the first part of tonight's show. That Seamus Coleman starts tonight for Everton against Manchester United in the Premier League. It continues a pretty good weekend for the Irish around Europe. Of course, the big two stories coming in Serie A and in the Eredivisie. Evan Ferguson. I'm going to say this. He scored the winner in that game. Not enough people call the second goal in a 3-1 win the winner, but technically, Evan Ferguson.
They went 3-0 up after.
They went 3-0. They wouldn't have won it without him. Scored the winner, shushes the crowd, as I said at the top, wearing those Ireland away jerseys. Roma, top of Serie A. They've scored nobody in the top six has scored fewer goals than them, but maybe Evan Ferguson will be the key to them scoring more goals.
The first time they haven't scored one goal. I could be wrong, but as I've been checking their scores fairly, it seems like they either win 1-0 or lose 1-0. So a 3-1 game is a feast.
Yeah, so Gasperini's Atalanta were the most free-scoring team around Europe. They were incredible to watch attacking-wise. And now he's taken over this Roma team where his strikers have been misfiring, but they've become really consistent and incredibly good at the back. So Ferguson can now 13 months without a goal. Let's follow it up with a few more.
Yeah,
Roma right in this Scudetto race. I still think the lack of goals may well come back to haunt them further down the season, because I think Inter and Napoli both have more goals in them. But at the same time, this has been a really, really good run for them. And finally, he gets this just off. And I actually thought it was a very clever finish.
It was.
Yeah. And he's back fit when all the other forwards are injured still. So
right decision.
He'll get a run here, like, yeah.
Meanwhile, Troy Parrott, I'm going to call this a consolation, even though there was time for an equaliser after that, but obviously Heron Vane went 3-1 up, and that's how it finished in the end. Michael Walker actually went to the Abe Leinstra Stadium in Heron Vane to watch this, of course, as they're playing Shells on Thursday. And Walker spoke to Joel and Kiki in the club shop, and they spoke about the AZ jersey with Parrott on the back flying off the shelves over the last week. They say, normally we get 3 or 4 orders from Ireland, but since the match last week, we are getting 50 to 60 a day just from Ireland. He's a striker, so shirts of Parrott on the back, but all the goals he's been scoring, he was the most popular shirt anyway, but now it's growing. Then he spoke to Troy Parrott as well, and he was asked if he's spoken to his Czech teammate Matej Syn, who came on at halftime, and he said, I've spoken to him a little bit, but he hasn't told me anything. I'm going to keep trying.
It looks like Souček might be gone, and not to get too far ahead towards this Czechia game.
Oh yeah?
It looks like his captaincy is gone, and certainly the
his captaincy is gone, yeah.
That he might not be in the squad when we come around.
Oh,
these
wow.
are all these little
wow,
hopes
right.
that you get a few months out.
Interesting. He's one of the players outside of Schick, obviously, that you look at and see as a kind of a decent level Premier League player, possibly dangerous. But like it did feel like there was a feel good factor that, like, Southampton, Finn Azaz scored 2 for Southampton. I think Ryan Manning scored as well. Aaron Connolly scored for Leighton Orient. You know, it's like great Irish stories all around. And then Seamus Coleman's randomly playing for Everton tonight. Like, come on, you boys in green.
These are the good times.
Your discourse about Parrott that was interesting was at the weekend, you had West Ham fans were annoyed that he's being linked with them, probably because of Ferguson, and they were sold that Ferguson was going to score all these goals. And the Troy Parrott fans were like, send him anywhere but West Ham. So everyone is convinced on both sides that transfer should not happen in January. So he's linked with a few teams in Germany as well. It's an interesting next decision that Troy has.
It definitely is. You've got one more football story for us as well, right?
Yeah, look, we can't leave Liverpool given what's happened to them at the weekend. So Arne Slot says he'll have to take the blame for a 6th Premier League defeat in 7 matches. His side went down 3-0 to Nottingham Forest at Anfield. Slot was asked if it was the worst defeat of his time in charge at Anfield.
Well, how bad, that's difficult to measure, but it was very bad, of course. Playing at home, losing 3-0, no matter which team you face, is of course a very, very, very bad result. Unexpected if you look at the first half hour of the game. In my opinion, a good start from us. Haven't seen us creating so much in half an hour, first half hour of a game, maybe throughout the whole season. I'm not sure because I don't remember every single game now, but we were able to create a lot. And the first time they arrived in our box, they scored a goal. And it's a very difficult cocktail to drink or to have if you miss out on your own chances. And almost every time you concede one, the ball goes in.
Yeah, this was arguably their worst performance of the season.
I think once they conceded, it was, yeah. And they obviously had a few grievances with the similar kind of offside in front of the goalkeeper issue. But, like, I don't, like, Liverpool are capitulating at the moment, you know, and that's shocking. And about a month ago, maybe about 3 weeks ago, there was some conversation, I think we talked about on the show, certainly talked in person, about, like, I couldn't believe Liverpool fans, how quickly there was a sort of a Slot has to go comment from the odd person on social media, say. And I was like, that's lunacy. Like, you know what I mean? They're in a little bit of a bad run. And they're all pointing, it's like, no, this has gone back to, like, March. This has gone back to March. This isn't this season. This is, and even when they were winning, they won their first 5 games of the season. There were some awful performances in there, and they got very lucky in a lot of last minute winners and so on. And we all thought, well, what a way to start while you find your form. And instead, it's gone the other way. It's like after Saturday, and I'm not suggesting he should be sacked or anything like that, but considering he won the league in May, the fact that we're even thinking about it. Is I think you have to start thinking about it now.
I think if they hadn't won the league last season, they'd be considering pulling the
trigger. Oh, I think he'd be gone if they didn't win the league last season. But they did. That actually happened. So it's like you can't dismiss it. But at the same time, it's like what's going on? They're not getting any better. They played Isak on Saturday almost because at some stage you have to, I think. And Verst is out and all. And he was awful. Like he was, they may as well have not had a striker. I think the one time the ball came to him, he swung and missed. And you're like, God almighty, right, okay, that can happen, fine. But he's not doing anything else. Mm-hmm. He's not getting anywhere near the ball. I think he had less touches in his time than Ekitike had in, or that even Chiesa, who came on for him, I think had double his touches. And he came on with 20 minutes to go or something like that, you know, and Ekitike had way more as well. So it's not as if like the striker isn't getting played to. It's just Isak. It's just a non-factor. And that's just, obviously, I think that's emblematic. How bad must Joe Gomez be? Or like the fact that he can't get Kanate out of that team or is never even given a try. Like, there's just so much wrong there. And you have to eventually say, what the hell is Slot doing?
Yeah,
that he hasn't changed anything. They're still doing all this. All the same players are still playing.
Yeah, if I was Joe Gomez for the Chelsea game, I would have went the minute that Gravenberch and Endo dropped in as the centre backs that night. I would have thought, yeah, what's the point?
He has tried a bit though. To be fair, like he may not have within reason
back to right back. This
yeah, week. But like even like Verts has gone from the centre to the left. He's gone between Ekitike and Isak, and he's been bringing Chiesa into games. He's brought Frimpong onto the right wing.
Never once started Chiesa, who's the only
one
who's
playing
with any energy. You know, I just feel like anything. Obviously, there's got to be certain tweaks here and there, but it just feels like that they're kind of, oh God, that didn't work right. Okay, well we'll start the same way again this week, and we'll see what we can do. No, I don't know. It feels like it's getting away from him, is the way I would describe it, just looking from the outside in.
It's like there's half a dozen issues and you can't fix them all at the one time.
Yeah.
If this was something simple that you went, okay, because everyone now points to, Salah looks like he's not working as hard as he did previously. He can't be indulged if he's not scoring. So is Salah the issue? Does Kanate look like he's a player who's halfway out the club? They're not the only two issues. It's not working elsewhere. And we saw how good Szoboszlai is in an attacking role with the international window. And now he can't play his natural game because he has to fit in at right back because they can't get anyone to actually slot in properly there. It's a mess.
3-0 at home. Like,
bad.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning results. We're going to have Jonathan Wilson with us on the football show tonight to go into a little bit more depth on Liverpool. You might bring us up to speed then, Will, on the rugby news. And the bulletin isn't looking so good after Saturday evening.
No, it's actually injury news. So Ryan Baird is a major doubt now for the start of Ireland's Six Nations campaign. Leinster confirming that the versatile forward is facing around 3 months on the sidelines due to a broken leg. Jamie Osborne will also be out for 4 months with a shoulder injury. The good news is that lock Joe McCarthy is going through the final stages of his recovery from a foot issue. Connacht's Mac Hansen as well suffered a reoccurrence of his foot injury in the game against the Springboks. We haven't got a timeline on his return just yet. Ireland head coach Andy Farrell, though, didn't take too kindly to being asked if the game was shambolic in the post-match press conference.
I said chaotic. Yeah, I won't repeat your word because I think you're wrong. I haven't seen a game like that ever. You think you've seen it all, and I haven't seen a game like that ever. But I suppose, you know, first and foremost, you look at yourself and why things have happened. So we'll do that and make sure that we learn the lessons from that. But my overriding thought of the game is that I'm unbelievably proud. So for you to start the conversation off like that doesn't sit well.
Did you have an opportunity?
Sorry, Dan, just one second. We have a lot of people to go through. Michael.
You lost the game, but how much do you think that whole experience, that everything that went on tonight will stand here?
Well, if you can't learn from that, then you're in the wrong place, really. For all sorts of reasons, I thought... going down to 12 men, how the lads came out and showed the bottle for the country.
Yeah, Andy Farrell there, and more on this on Wednesday Night Rugby after 8 o'clock. And we've got some big news for rugby fans. The Off the Ball Rugby Roadshow is going to be live from the RDS this January ahead of the Men's Guinness Six Nations Championship. So you can join Brian O'Driscoll and a host of very special guests yet to be announced as we dive into all things Irish rugby before the Six Nations. There's also going to be fantastic prizes up for grabs, including Six Nations tickets on the night there. So bring your mates, grab a pint and get ready for an unforgettable evening celebrating Irish rugby. And tickets are currently on pre-sale for Off the Ball members, and they're going to be on general sale via Ticketmaster very shortly. It's all with thanks to Bank of Ireland, the proud sponsor of the Irish rugby team. Never stop competing. Load of text coming in on the rugby. 0879 180 180 is our WhatsApp number. We've got Owen in touch to say the match between Ireland and South Africa is everything that is wrong with rugby. It is now so saturated with rules and boring tactics that only real diehard fans might appreciate it. Did they ever think of just getting rid of the scrum? They collapse most of the time anyway and rarely result in an advantage for the team that wins the scrum. I think it resulted in a good bit of an advantage for South Africa over the course of the weekend. John in Limerick says, lads, Ireland have a major problem. Big is now back. Bigger than ever before. Big challenges lie ahead. Whatever about ref decisions, Ireland were beaten up on Saturday. Larry is going for the jugular here. He says, surely we are Farrell out. We are as far off the top nations as we've ever been. Interest in rugby is waning and the provinces are not performing where they should be. The IRFU needs a real shake-up. Two props not at it and Sheehan too light for a scrummaging hooker. Rip it up, start again. And then finally, Brian and Shirley's been in touch to say, lads, read the rugby over the November games, England and France in their games, blooded new players, particularly France in their game against South Africa. Give younger players a chance. Why play the old brigade all the time? It's a joke. A lot of good young players out there not being given the chance. Give them the experience of playing in front of 60,000 instead of the 10,000 in the URC.
Well, the issue that comes in this is obviously the RFU have not hidden the fact that they have to play the very front line for the Six Nations, so expect outside the Italy game very little rotation to happen. I think the core group that was in the Ireland squad from the November internationals are who was going to Australia. Like, I can't imagine it's going to be much change.
I don't know. I don't mind one or two in. I do like the idea of earning your jersey, and we don't have to do everything the same way as everybody else. I think the initial text, I think, is worth going back to. Forget about getting rid of the scrums. That's obviously too far and everything like that. But there is an element of, like, the hardcore rugby supporter is defend. Like, there's a lot of kind of defense mechanism of, like, this is the game, this is what it's built on. It's like, you know, the dominance. And it's like, the fact is that there's an awful lot of people who watch the game who aren't expert on it and everything like that. And it is horrendous to watch when a game is like that, when it's taking so long and it's stopping all the time and people don't know what the hell is going on. And I don't know what the solution is. I don't think it's just like allow head hits. But like, at some point that matters. It matters that like an awful lot of kind of people outside of the hardcore are getting turned off to it. And by the way, the scrummaging part of the game and all of that stuff was unusual. The head hit stops for TMO isn't. That's happening in every game at the moment.
That feels like the theme of November.
It is so boring and so long, and you're just sitting there just waiting for the game to be over.
Will you give us a roundup of today's Gaelic Games news, because there is a bit happening?
I will indeed. Yeah, it's going to be a neutral venue, it seems, for the Munster Club football final. The Irish Examiner reporting seeing the option of a coin toss has now been ruled out by Munster Council in terms of home advantage. Kerry's Dingle will be taking on Cork St Finbarr's in that decider. Brian Hayes, better known for his hurling, but he scored a second hat-trick of the season against Clare opposition as the All-Stars' three goals helped St Finbarr's overcome the Clare dual champions Aeroge Ennis by 320 to 14 points yesterday afternoon. It was equally comfortable for the Kerry champions Dingle, who eased to a 215 to 2 points win against the new Limerick Kingpins Mungret St Paul's. Conor Ganey notching 2-2 from playing that one. Kilcoot will await the winners of this Sunday's refixed Ulster Club football semi-final between Scotstown and Newbridge. That will now be played at the Athletic Grounds in Armagh. The two sides met in Omagh yesterday, but that game was called off. Ronnie Wynne saw it on TV at half time. The pitch had become unplayable due to heavy rain. Not helped either, I think, by the intermediate game before it going to extra time, which meant more wear and tear on the pitch. But the ball did not bounce when they were due to come back out for the second half. Ballyhale Shamrocks, meanwhile, will have a chance to win a 13th Leinster hurling title on Saturday week. Shamrocks boss Henry Shefflin has confirmed, though, that Adrian Mullen won't be back in time for their clash with St Martins of Wexford at Croke Park. Mullen underwent surgery last week on his thumb following their quarter-final win against Kilcormac Colley. Shefflin has said it was a dirty stroke that was pulled across Mullen during the game as well. St Martins are into their first ever Leinster final. They've already accounted for the reigning All-Ireland champions Nafina on the way, and they eased to a 21 points to 11 win against Nace yesterday afternoon.
Will O'Callaghan, thank you for Monday night's extended news round.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.